You see Ruby Rose?
Yeah.
As Batwoman?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think she looks good.
You think that's a good approximation of the suit?
Yeah.
Cool. You don't think the cape looks a little a dollar store Halloween-y?
No, I like how the cape looks like the interior of an actual bat's wing.
Yeah. I wonder why they didn't go with interior red, because that was always like a cool Dracula kind of look.
I accept it.
You accept it?
It's the CW.
It's true. You got me there. All right, fair enough. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm Jared Jones. Across the table from me is MJ Kramer. Every week we talk about comics, or at least we try to. We're trying something new these last couple of weeks. We're letting our cats be in the room with us as we record. And I don't know if you guys follow either of us on social media, but I have a tendency to complain about my cats, and MJ has a tendency to loud her cats. And
my cats. It's weird that you say your cats.
Two of them are technically co-ours.
I mean, I would say they're probably our cats. I've never heard you call them. I've never heard you personally say my cat before.
Well, when we're together alone in the house, what occasion do I have to be like, no, our cats are great?
I don't know. I've just never heard you say it. It's strange.
We got two of them. Well, we got three. We have Mixie, but he's old and he's very chilly.
He's very chill.
He's over there sleeping. But then we've got Cooper and Audrey. Cooper's an orange cat, and he, oh my God, this nightmare.
He's still mostly a kitten. He's like maybe 9, 10 months old.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just a little crazy.
A little crazy, to be putting it mildly. Like, my hands now look like Edward Scissorhands' face. Thanks
Ellie,
to Cooper.
Because
I'm trying to keep him out of trouble. He knocks over stacks of comic books. He does knock over glasses yet, which I'm grateful for. We had a cat once that used to do that.
Just like that was her favorite thing to do. You see a glass, knock it down.
Hot dog. But Audrey, she's pretty chill over there. She's cleaning out her nether regions, so it's all good. We'll try this out. This week, we're talking about New York Comic Con.
Not cats anymore.
Not cats anymore.
Hope you enjoyed the update.
Yeah. Cat update. There's so much news that trickled out of New York Comic Con. It feels like, in terms of pop culture severity, NYCC is actually competing for the top spot over San Diego this year. Because a lot more interesting stuff came out this year from New York than it did from San Diego, I feel.
I'd say it's probably equal.
Yeah.
And
especially this year?
Yeah, I agree, which is weird, because usually it would be no contest. San Diego's got all the big shit. I was kind of surprised that New York Comic Con got a lot of sort of like the kind that usually come out from San Diego.
Yeah, like Aquaman's trailer hit for New York this year.
Yeah, which makes sense. It comes out soon.
Mm-hmm. But we also got like big time first looks for Hellboy. And what else showed us a ludicrous amount of time? Oh, the what's that movie? The Machines, the Cities and the Sky. With
Mortal
Hugo.
Engines?
That's the one. Like 23 minutes of that.
Also, the Good Omens TV series.
That's right. How much did they show of that?
I don't know, but they had this big like walkthrough thing where you could like, it's like how they do at San Diego, those experiences.
Right. Yeah,
you could go through and see all of the interior of.
They had one for The Tick a couple years back at San Diego and we didn't go to. It was right outside the hotel. I really regret not doing that. Well, so I guess we'll just talk about New York Comic Con news pre, during, and post.
Yeah.
Does that work for you?
Sounds good.
No reason to break it up. First, though, we got to talk about the biggest news that dropped. This comes from Deadline, but I think they took it from The Wrap. I couldn't figure out who got it first, The Wrap or Deadline, but...
They mentioned The Wrap in their write-up.
But they're both reporting that James Gunn has jumped ship from Marvel to DC and is going to be writing, with potential to direct, Suicide Squad 2.
Such a weird announcement.
Isn't it odd how life works out? Because Suicide Squad... was clearly, the first one was clearly trying to chase the Guardians of the Galaxy algorithm there.
Blatantly.
Yeah, it was, especially with the trailers, and then they hired the trailer folks to like doll it up. And ain't nothing like the real thing, is what I'm trying to say.
Our friend Tini Howard, I don't know if it was on Facebook or some social media, commented on someone posting about this and said, this is like when you're dating someone and they break up with you, and to sort of get back at them, you date the worst possible awful human ever. So that's kind of what James Gunn is doing, it seems like.
Well, I mean, okay. I'm not a big fan of Suicide Squad in any iteration. The Ostrander era was pretty cool, I suppose, just because it was an interesting enough concept. The Task Force X. Why is that so hard to say? The Task Force X episode of Justice League Unlimited is one of the best that they ever made. However, I have never been able to enjoy the Suicide Squad, mostly because it's like it's just emblematic of that new metal, grimdark, mid-aughts bullshit that I really hated about comics.
The thing with Suicide Squad that I think puts it apart from Guardians of the Galaxy is, while it might seem like it's a similar concept, the Guardians of the Galaxy are all anti-heroes, while Suicide Squad, like, they're straight up villains.
They're bona fide villains, that's right. Yeah. So it's tough to, it's a tough sell. You have to make these characters, if not relatable, approachable in terms of like entertainment.
And just sympathetic from an audience point of view, not necessarily like legit sympathetic.
So what the first Suicide Squad movie did in a very short period of time, because they had no time to make this movie, is that they just used a lot of visual shorthand and dramatic shorthand to make us feel like they're actual heroes underneath all of the grimy veneer. And I think that James Gunn is a better filmmaker than that. I think he's a more shrewd storyteller than that. I think he's going to find more interesting ways to convey what the Suicide Squad are, who they are to each other, and what they mean to a broader, perhaps schematic, if DC still insists on making more of these DCEU films. However, with this news comes the little wrinkle that this may not, in fact, be a sequel proper, but a reboot.
I mean, it says it like it's there's rumors of it.
Right.
It said that it might mean that they're recasting. I doubt they're going to recast Margot Robbie.
Hell no.
I mean, we don't know anything at this point. But
no,
like,
we don't. We don't know a damn thing. Isn't it liberating not to know a thing?
Yeah, and I'm not really, like, I'm not that excited about this. Like, I really don't.
I'm excited for James Gunn. Because he got done dirty at Marvel.
I don't know. The thing that I notice the most in movies is, like, the treatment of women.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't treat them real great. So, I mean, the first Suicide movie sucked in that regard as well. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not exactly expecting much improvement. But, man, I guess I'll just be looking forward to that Birds of Prey movie.
Birds of Prey, I suppose, is going to be kind of like an offshoot spinoff of Suicide Squad anyway. So there's going to be some crossing of the streams there in some regard.
I'd like to think they're going to do their ladies a little better than either Suicide Squad or either the Guardians of the Galaxy movies did.
I feel like James Gunn's a guy that listens to criticism of his own brand and of others. I really do. I don't know what the fuck a lot of that in Guardians 2 was about, especially towards Mantis, which just seemed cruel in a lot of places.
I just feel like the first movie, which was a great amount of it, of the writing, was done by Nicole Perlman.
Mm-hmm.
And then James Gunn took over and tweaked a lot of her script.
Right.
I think that Gamora's character in particular, just the second movie, she got relegated to being love interest with huge daddy issues.
She did have that really awesome sequence with Nebula, though, where they hash it out and then they have this like huge catharsis afterwards. That's a really powerful moment.
Yeah, almost that hashing out was just about Thanos.
Yeah. But he was their father who abused them their entire lives.
But it still doesn't break the Bechdel test.
Yeah, it's true.
That movie just really bummed me out on a whole lot of levels.
I enjoyed it. Second time going around, I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would.
Oh, you rewatched it?
Yeah, I did. Without you.
Uh-huh. I didn't want all. I didn't
grousing
want
the entire time. I think that what happened with Gunn and Marvel is ridiculous, and I'm really pleased to see that other studios
I think we should specify it's Gunn and Disney, not Marvel necessarily.
Right. I think if Feige had an actual say in it, which is odd to think that he didn't, but it really came down to what Disney had to say about it, and they just severed ties, which is so antithetical to what they stand for as storytellers. It's like people change their whole thing of the Disney movies I have seen. Me and MJ were talking earlier about how I don't watch any Disney movies. But of the few I've seen, all of them are about change against insurmountable odds. And I feel like James Gunn had changed into a Disney-molded filmmaker and had been, you know, playing to their fife.
I agree. I don't know. It's a weird situation, and I'm glad he's going to be working on something else and that we'll get a better Suicide Squad, even if it's not what I want to watch, but you know.
It's not going to be a little better. It's going to be a wash.
I do feel like we never got to really see what Ayer was going to do.
Yeah, but I mean, DC was so hot in a biscuit to chase Marvel and get this cinematic universe out that they weren't paying attention. This is still Warner Brothers we're dealing with. They're not known for being patient. They're not known for letting auteurs tell their stories. They just want to make money, and they want to make it rapidly.
It looks like they're starting to care, and they're starting to actually make some stuff that might be fun to watch.
Are you referring to the Joker movie?
I am referring to the Aquaman trailer.
Oh, and that's what we call a segue.
You like it?
I did. So Warner Brothers and DC Films released a 5-minute trailer, which seemed excessive, of Aquaman.
We watched it in the morning, like it's going, and it's like, wait. It's still playing. How long is this trailer?
5 minutes. There was a lot of concern that maybe we had just watched the entire film, but James Wan, the director, took to Twitter to make sure that says, by their very nature, trailers are spoilers, but this one barely scratches the surface of the film.
I don't feel like I got spoiled. There are lots of trailers where you're like, wow, I don't need to watch this movie, but I still felt like there is a lot of... They left a lot of questions to be answered.
Absolutely.
I'm really excited to find out the answers to those questions.
I'm excited because, and this is going to what we were just talking about with Warner Brothers and how they just want to shove things out. I feel like they really are being patient with Aquaman. It got nudged back a little bit in terms of release. Juan was very specific about not letting any first looks come out until he felt they were ready, until he felt the CGI was where it needed to be, until he felt the editing was where it needed to be.
And there is a lot of CGI in this movie.
My God, so much. It's a little plasticine for my tastes, however.
And like you mentioned, at a point, you can tell they just kind of blopped Nicole Kidman's head on a stunt woman.
Yeah. I mean, when you're caught up in it in IMAX when it comes out, I'm sure it'll be the furthest thing from your mind. But on a technical reading of, like, watching it on the crappy HD version of YouTube on a big screen TV, you catch little things. Like, Orm's head, for example. Patrick Wilson's head is clearly CGI'd onto a body. And that's just what we're doing now.
At a couple points, the CGI was very... Very obvious.
But let's talk tone. Because CGI, I mean, this is going to be a gripe no matter what. It's just so much of it.
No, yeah. I mean, as far as tone, like, it doesn't, like, the CGI doesn't necessarily look out of place. Mm-hmm. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
It just looks like they're creating, you know, like, a fantastic world. It's not as good as, like, the fantastic world created in Black Panther.
Right.
But you can tell that they're kind of aiming for a touch of that.
Yeah.
It does look beautiful. It looks cool. It looks fun.
It does look fun.
It looks like it's not taking itself too seriously. It just wants to tell a really fun yarn.
Now, with fun comes optimism. There's blue skies. There's a whole action sequence that takes place during the day. And I was like, is this a DC movie? Where's all the fog and the lightning and the fire?
It's bright. And that's another thing about the sheen that you mentioned is that, mm-hmm. And it makes sense for things to have a sheen because a lot of it's underwater and wet and all. Mm-hmm. Like, it should be glisteny.
Yeah.
Speaking of glisteny, Jason Momoa looks great.
He does.
You see him wear the movie version of the OG, you know, scaled orange costume.
I can't believe they actually went for that. Jason Momoa, while he is a captivating and very handsome man, is raged out in tattoos, has long, stupid hair.
A lot of the tattoos that he wears as Aquaman are not real tattoos, you know.
I know, that's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. It's like, so I infer a lot of things by watching a trailer of this length. One being that this movie's going to be so long. And when you compare footage from the first trailer to this one, there's even more to his origin story than I think a lot of people are expecting. You see him, you see his parents hook up, you see him get born, you see him watch his mother leave. You see him grow up with a single father. You see him grow up as a teenager being trained by, I think, Willem Dafoe, who has yet to appear in any of these movies.
This all might be very quick, you know?
It could be.
Like, I trust James Wan.
However, I got one big nitpick, and it's killing me. Why do we have to have it when kids, like, when superheroes are children, they have to make the kids look almost identical to the adult counterpart? Like the kid in the aquarium, he has long hair with the frosted tips just like Momoa has. It's like, does the guy have the same hair his entire life? The kid bits are going to bum me out a little bit, I think, because I feel like that's just an unnecessary part of like superhero movies today. You don't need to have the arduous origin story where the hero finds his path. Just throw us in the middle of him already in a derring do and let us catch up. That makes for the better movie always.
Maybe DC hasn't learned that lesson yet.
Maybe not. Although, I think with Aquaman, he's not as easy a sell as Wonder Woman or Batman or Superman. He's been the butt of so many jokes for so long, like, to sell him to a wider audience.
He was the butt of a joke in, which was it Justice League or Batman v Superman, when he said, oh, don't you talk to fish? Oh, yeah, that was from Justice League.
But who can tell? It's all an amorphous blur.
I just had to remember that he doesn't actually have any lines in BVS, so.
Barely has any lines in Justice League. You're out of your mind, Bruce Wayne. Jason Momoa, okay, the new metal thing's gotta go. Like, his, like, eager enthusiasm is cute when he squeaks, like, this is badass. But, like, the Khal Drogo bits that I think he was hired for have yet to reveal themselves. But who do we want? Do we want an Aquaman that, like, pours, like, molten gold on somebody's skull? Or do we want the surfer dude, Yahoo, my man kind of guy?
I think they have made it clear that they're going more for the latter and not for the former. Mm-hmm. I feel like if Snyder was still helming all this shit, yeah, it would be more of a Khal Drogo kind of a vibe. I'm glad it's not.
See, I'm still wounded by reading, like, what Juan and Snyder had in mind for this movie, like Game of Thrones but underwater, and Mera's the Khaleesi of the sea. These are actual words they used, not me. So,
speaking of Mera, mm-hmm, I want to make clear that I think Amber Heard looked awesome.
That wig, I can't get past it.
Fuck that wig. I don't care. She looked awesome. Her effects looked awesome.
Yeah.
She had such a huge part in this trailer.
She's going to have a huge part in this movie.
Well, I mean, a lot of, there's like weird studies and stuff where they show, like, usually it's like spoken lines in trailers and mostly all men. And this one was a lot of her.
Yeah, there's more of Mera in Aquaman than there was Captain Marvel in the Captain Marvel trailer.
That might be true.
Yeah.
I am totally here for Amber Heard as Mera.
Yeah.
I love the character anyway, and I'm really excited to see her on the screen.
Oh, no. I'm excited to see Dolph Lundgren. He looks ridiculous.
Oh, that's right.
He plays her dad.
I'm excited to see Black Manta. When, like, that one part in the trailer when he, like, leaps up. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got really excited.
He looks like a toy.
He's supposed to look like a toy. He was designed for the fucking Super Friends show.
But he looks like a mascot, like at Disneyland.
No, you're silly.
Like, he looks very foamy.
You're silly.
I'm not silly. When I finally see it in the movie, I'm sure that it'll look more tactile, but he looks squishy.
He looks squishy.
Yeah. You think Aquaman's going to lose his ham?
I doubt it. I hope not.
No?
See, that seems like a thing that if there was a Snyder-led universe, that would happen.
Yeah.
And it would be this dramatic moment. I hope they don't do that.
What else do you need?
Yeah.
So, speaking of edgy-looking types, Ruby Rose, coming back around to this. They revealed the first look after New York Comic Con, yesterday, in fact, in the lead-up of the premiere of The Flash, which was last night and we did not watch.
And their Elseworlds crossover.
Right. Which is happening a lot sooner than I think both of us think. It's happening in December. So I think you and I need to start, you know, bearing down on our CW-DC-TV catch-up.
Need to. Want to.
Yeah, those are different. Those are different things. But if anything's going to bring us back, Ruby Rose's Batwoman would be it.
That is true.
So let's take a look at this costume real quick. Typical CW image, highly photoshopped. But the costume itself is, I feel like, it's not a 1-1 representation from the comics, but they went with the long hair, which they did not have to do. I guess DC is in love with cheap, fake, red-looking wigs.
But as far as, like, actual canon goes, she's supposed to be wearing a wig.
I know.
So,
I know.
Like, it makes sense.
Wigs look one way in comics and look completely different in real life.
That is true. But I do think that this photo that they decided to use has her with a very similar expression to the drawings that J.H. Williams has done of the character. Like, the same
sneer.
Yeah, the same sneer. Oh, it makes me really happy to see this. I wish they wouldn't have gone with such a molded cowl. I always kind of get annoyed about that. I was like, I don't need to see, like, grimacy brows on the mask. But other than that, I'm pretty cool with it.
I can't wait to see what Ruby Rose looks like without her mask, because she has that awesome short hair. And, I mean, in the comics, Kate Kane has red hair. I think Ruby Rose looked great with that color red hair. I don't know if they'll actually go for it, but we'll see. We still have yet to discover what Gotham this is going to take place in. Is this going to be the... Oh, God, I got my Earths all mixed up because it's been so long since I've watched any of these shows. But is it going to be in the Supergirl Earth? Is it going to be on the Flash Earth?
It's going to be on an entirely different Earth?
Could be. Is this going to be a Gotham without a Batman entirely and it's just Batwoman? Is that signal for her? Because it looks like the signal that's on her chest?
Well, they are going to be having Nora Freeze in this little crossover.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least going to be that.
Maybe she'll be Ms. Freeze?
Maybe. This will be a gender-swapped universe.
I wouldn't be the least
surprised. God, that would be amazing.
That would be very on brand for the CW.
We also soon get to see Lois Lane, played by Elizabeth Tulloch,
mm-hmm,
along with Tyler Hoechlin. We get to see him again.
Yeah.
In his little butt.
I'm excited for more Superman. Superman and Batwoman in the CW feels like, why are they just holding off on Batman? Why are they...
Fuck Batman.
Well, yeah.
Get enough Batman.
Whoa.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to quote the Titans show.
See, that's what happens when you start getting too snarky. You start sounding like a petulant sidekick.
Oh, my God. Did you hear more details about that Titans show? Is that in that universe, that Batman kills. Yeah, and he's trained Robin to do so.
Yeah, I heard
what
all that.
What in the fuck?
Yeah. No, we're not watching that. I actually canceled our DC Universe subscription.
I know you did, I know.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not watching this.
Our subscription, as though I had any say in that. I did not advocate that DCU subscription service. I want everyone to know that was all Jared.
I thought it was more, it's going to be more in depth than what it actually was. There's barely any comic books in there.
Well, you thought it was going to be more like the Marvel Unlimited service.
Right.
That, like, pretty much puts every single Marvel comic available like 3 months after it's been published.
I honestly did. And then what it was just like a smattering of books from particular runs that have something to do with their tie-in movies and TV shows. DC Universe doesn't even have everything that DC has ever done. Like Teen Titans Go, for example, is not on the DC Universe streaming service.
Which is the only thing I would pay them to have readily available for streaming. The only thing.
Because we just got rid of our, you know, premium cable package that had like TCM, Cartoon Network. So I'm going through TTG withdrawals.
We'll figure out some way to get Teen Titans Go.
Just have to get it on Blu-ray.
Well, we just have to put more research into which service we get that'll have it and probably get a Roku box.
I really feel like we're going to have to get that Disney streaming thing for the Marvel stuff.
Oh, well, we're definitely getting the Marvel thing, yes. It's got Marvel Studios TV shows.
I know.
We have to get that.
I know.
But speaking of Marvel Studios TV shows, but not studios, just Marvel.
Another segue towards Daredevil Season 3, Major League trailer. All these trailers just on top of each other. I think three of them have come out in totality. And all of them within like 2 weeks of each other. It's
Most of them within 1 week.
Yeah. It's been a lot. And Daredevil, of course, starts on the 19th, I think.
It's very soon.
Yeah, it's coming up. This heralds the mighty return of one Wilson Fisk, played by Vincent D'Onofrio. As far as this trailer is concerned, we see a Matt Murdock torn asunder. He has had everything ripped away from him, up to and including his heroic alter ego. A ringer has been put into his suit, hired by one Wilson Fisk to defame him and ruin him before Fisk moves in for the kill. And the person who has stepped into the boots of the man without fear is none other than Bullseye.
And it's sadly, sadly, not Colin Farrell.
Or Jason Statham.
Wish it was Colin Farrell.
I was really rooting for Statham. No, it would have been fun.
I just want to see Colin Farrell in more things.
This show needs to have fun in it. Jason Statham would have been fun.
No one ever has fun with Daredevil except Mark Waid and Chris Somney.
Yeah, I completely forgot. These trailers look typically dour and everything looks rather grim and violent. This is a very punchy trailer.
And shouty. And angry.
Yeah, but it's appropriate considering that this is probably going to be the final season that has D'Onofrio in it. This might even be the last season of Daredevil entirely. I was actually talking about this with somebody else the other day. Yep, there he goes. What's up, Cooper? Get it out of your system?
He's just so you guys know, he's standing in our front window, hollering out the window.
Yeah, it's great. So because Disney's starting their own streaming service, the MCU TV shows on Netflix may no longer be a thing. Like, they might get scooped up and put over there. And if they do continue, they would continue over there at all. But I don't think Marvel really needs that headache if they're going to be putting more money into their own television.
Well, I wonder what the contract's like for that. Like, I'm guessing Netflix gets to keep the streaming rights for these in perpetuity. Like, I don't think they'll be able to give the stuff that they already made over to Disney to have on theirs.
And
I don't think they
would
do that.
Then I think this is the last hurrah. We might maybe get a really quick Defender season 2 out of this, but I mean, we haven't heard any announcements on that front. And every superhero in the Defenders universe has had their second season or their third season.
Yeah.
The only thing that's remaining is the second season of The Punisher. And maybe with that comes the announcements of Defender season 2. Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, it's very up in the air.
Moving on over to Hellboy, which got a huge, huge presence at New York Comic Con, starring David Harbour of one Stranger Things and a cameo in Suicide Squad, it should be mentioned.
That's right. That was right after Stranger Things had come out, too.
I know, it was really weird.
We saw him and it was like, oh.
It's like, why did you give him one line? Did you not know what you were working with?
Well,
you fools.
At that point, you know, Stranger Things hadn't come out. He hadn't become like the known face household name that he is now.
Right. But now he is Hellboy, and he looks magnificent.
And now he's got known pecs. Like, did you see that poster?
Oh, those are fake.
Oh, whatever. Who cares?
Sure. I'm sure Ron Perlman's were fake, too, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, probably.
Hellboy looks like it's going to be a little darker than what we got with the Guillermo del Toro films. I'm not hip to the Hellboy comic books at all. This is time for confession. I have never read a single one.
I've read a few here and there, but I haven't read like the whole thing. And I have multiple coworkers who that's like their favorite.
Oh, I know dozens of people that absolutely swear allegiance to the altar of Mignola.
Most of the people I work with just adore that whole series and that character.
Yeah.
And Dark Horse has recently re-released all of their Hellboy trades in these big like omnibus trades.
Yeah.
And finally put them back into stock.
Hey, how about that?
So I can actually stock them. They are assumedly a super good primer, so I'm kind of thinking about getting those.
Yeah, I definitely want to start reading some in the lead up to this film, because I'm tired of being left out in the cold with this character. I'm tired of not having the fun that other people are clearly having. I did see the first film, and I saw parts of the second, and the second one just lost me.
I saw them both, and I heard that like it strays a bit. Mm-hmm. They're still fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Guillermo del Toro aesthetic, it's cool to watch whether you're watching a Hellboy movie or not.
If the poster is indicative in any way of what the film's going to look like, sign me up. Because this looks like Tim Curry and Legend types of awesome. The makeup looks spectacular. The horns look great. The fist looks smaller and more svelte. Is that the word I want to use?
Maybe it's...
Probably not.
Yeah, I guess we'll see when we actually see the movie.
Absolutely. But as far as David Harbour in the makeup, how he's acting, we have yet to see it. So folks, if you were at New York Comic Con and you spotted this, maybe give us a hint of what we were looking at. Until then, I'm looking forward to it. You guys are getting a little window into my life. This cat, he doesn't stop. He goes to the window and he sees people walk by and he howls like he's on death row or something. And people look in and they go, what is wrong with that cat? And I hide my face in shame. Yeah, we're talking about you, Cooper. Did you get him?
Yeah, I got him.
Hey, Coop. What's up, you spud? All right, moving on from Hellboy, another ding-dang movie news. God Country.
This one is more exciting than the other ones, just in that it's kind of like a bigger whoa kind of a thing.
Well, I think the biggest woe is that Donny Cates moved God Country to Aftershock instead of keeping it at Image.
Did he? I thought they just mentioned Aftershock because Cates has other properties there. It is a creator-owned piece, so he does have the rights to move it wherever he wants.
It's being adapted by Aftershock and Legendary Pictures.
That's weird.
Cates will adapt his own story for the movie, which marks the second collaboration between Legendary and Aftershock, and the first time Aftershock will develop a property outside of its own line.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's just like Aftershock's movie end? That's weird.
I mean, you ever talk to Pruitt and Martz, they have ambition beyond just like standard, like they're
it's kind of a bummer though to know that they're that obsessed with the comics to movie pipeline.
Well,
and it can't just
we
be
got
a comic
room to talk. We just spent what 20 minutes talking about comic book movies,
but we have a lot of comic stuff to talk about, and it's always kind of a bummer to see people who are pitching comics just in the hopes to option it.
Well, God Country was a complete thing before Donnie even hopped over to Aftershock.
Yeah, and God Country is great.
Yes,
and this. It's really exciting news.
It'll make a killer movie if it gets made.
It's always cool to see comic book properties that are not superhero shit getting, you know, wider release, wider recognition to kind of remind all the folks that when somebody says comic books, they don't necessarily mean superheroes.
And here I thought the ascension of Donny Cates couldn't go any higher. The guy has become so successful, his hair turned white.
And before that, it was pink.
Good for Donny Cates. So, MJ, do you want to talk about some actual comic book news before we do the top five?
Yes.
All right. The big news for me was the DC Comics announcement that they were launching yet another Brian Bendis-helmed comics imprint called Wonder Comics. Now, this looks like it's going to be directed towards, you know, the teen demographic, whatever that means anymore. And it's going to feature a slate of books by a very exciting crew of creators. Not a single woman in this lineup, which is disappointing.
Otherwise, really diverse, which is cool, but no ladies.
Yeah.
What a bummer.
So it's going to feature the return of certain characters, which I feel are going to be a little jarring if it's going to be in continuity and play in the same sandbox of the DCU. But if they don't care, I guess I shouldn't either.
Well, a good writer will make that work.
How is Connor Kent going to come back is my question. I'm really excited to see him back in his own leather jacket. This is going to be a part of the Young Justice title that Bendis is going to be writing alongside his action co-collaborator, Patrick Gleason.
Well, they haven't said if Patrick Gleason is doing the art on this. They just say his Bendis' co-collaborator. So he could still co-write.
It's true.
He co-story-told all of the stuff with Tomasi.
You got me there.
Even when he wasn't doing the art. So hopefully he's still artist on action, because, God, I love him on that book. He's so good.
Same. And then we have Wonder Twins, which will be written by Mark Russell and illustrated by Stephen Byrne. Good for Stephen, by the way. Mark Russell on any book for DC is a plus, but Wonder Twins, I mean, why not? I mean, this guy's been turning animation into narrative gold for years now for DC, so this, I don't see any reason why I should stop here.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the biting social satire he is known for is going to translate well into a teen-focused book. I guess we'll see. It worked in Prez?
After that, we have Dial H for Hero, written by Sam Humphries and illustrated by Joe Quinones. That book looks fantastic. The cover is amazing. That picture of Superman he was teasing on Twitter, it turned out to be a cover for this.
Yes, yes, it looked very cool.
And then there will be Naomi, which will be co-written by Bennis and Mr. David Walker, with art by Jamal Campbell. And I'm not sure what Naomi's about. It's probably new characters. But they released an oddly composed image of all the characters in the new Wonder Comics line, including a logo, which I guess will be the banner atop all these books. So it can be differentiated from the DCU proper. That's not confusing at all. But how do we feel about Bart Allen, Connor Kent, and Tim Drake reuniting in their semi-classic duds contrasted with the newer, truer DC characters?
Well,
having Bart Allen back means a couple of things, but having Tim Drake back means that he's not one of the many characters that have been teased to die in the next couple of months.
I mean, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens. If this is some kind of weird time thing where they're going to go and grab the group of them from a different era or some weird thing.
Yeah.
But a news item that had me more excited is, well, Boom Studios got the Buffy license.
It's true.
Which was, everybody was guessing was going to happen since they got the Firefly license. But the cool thing about this one is that Jordy Belair is going to be writing this.
Yeah.
It's incredibly exciting. And Dan Mora is going to be doing the interiors.
Dan Mora is a grossly undervalued artist.
Oh, no, no. He's great. He's just, he doesn't have the same kind of high-profile gigs because he works mostly with Boom doing interiors.
Yeah, that's true.
He has been on, like, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers books and all that stuff. And the
Klaus.
Yeah. Yes.
Santa Claus.
The Santa Claus book. Really looking forward to this. They're going to kind of do a slight reboot with it, have it taking place now. I'm guessing they're doing a similar thing to what the upcoming show was going to do.
Maybe. They introduced a new character that we don't know anything about in one of their variant covers.
Who is a lady of color, right. Which is super cool to see.
This is illustrated by Royal Dunlap. I don't know anything about Buffy, so I don't care either way. Hooray for people.
I'm excited to see a lady writing Buffy.
Mm-hmm. It's also going to feature covers by Kevin Wada and Matt Taylor.
Yeah, that Kevin Wada cover is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really mention what Whedon's involvement is going to be.
If any.
And honestly, who cares? I want Georgia to tell what she wants to tell. She has proven on Redlands that she can write badass ladies who can wield a hell of a lot of magic. So it's going to be cool.
Back to DC. They announced Flash Year One. Because why not?
Yeah, that one, DC didn't announce a whole ton of stuff other than the Wonder Comics thing, so I guess this is something.
This is something. I mean, Josh Williamson has pretty much planted his flag in the Flash mythos. Makes sense that he would be able to tell the definitive post-rebirth Flash origin story for Barry Allen, I guess. It's going to feature art by Howard Porter, and I think he has shaped up to be one of the finest Flash artists. May I be so bold as to say that?
Yeah, his stuff has gotten real great.
Oliver Sava once, he incepted an idea in my head once with a tweet, and he said, imagine Howard Porter now working on JLA in 97.
Oh my god, my head so exploded. Much better.
It would have been amazing. What kind of story are we going to be telling here with Barry Allen? Is he still going to be struck by lightning, by Avada Chemicals as a police CSI, or are they actually changing the paradigm here?
I don't know. I don't really care much about Barry anymore, so yeah. This is not something I'm going to be picking up. I haven't. Sure. The Williamson run has just been kind of not really something I've been digging a lot.
I know you really like The Flash, too.
I would prefer it was Wally, but it's fine.
Well, wait until, kids our age start taking over the higher-up positions of DC. You'll see Wally come
Oh,
back.
yeah, and Kyle and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marvel had the better, comic book announcements as far as stuff goes this year.
What did you like?
Well, they announced a secondary Conan series. Aside from the one they already announced that Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Azra are doing, this one's going to be Jerry Duggan and Ron Gurney. So it's fun to see Marvel getting that license back and just digging their teeth into it. There's also going to be another Spider-Man comic, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Tom Taylor and Juan Cabal are going to be doing that one. There's going to be a new Black Widow series written by Jen and Sylvia Saska, who I guess do movies?
I guess? I don't know.
And
Marvel doesn't like to hire comic writers.
Hey, they're hiring in new people, new faces. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with that. comics writing isn't that hard, and like if they've put out multiple movies, I think, you know, they know how to do a script.
Sure.
There's also going to be, and this is very exciting for me, they're finally doing a War of the Realms story, which Jason Aaron has been building towards for like 2 years now, three. Mm-hmm. And Russell Dowderman and Matt Wilson are going to be back for the art on that.
Is this going to be the swan song of Aaron's Thor run, do you think?
I mean, it could be, but shut up. I don't want to think about that.
MJ, are you ready for the top five?
I am.
All right, let's do it. All right, take it away.
So the first one I'm going to start out with is an Image book. And this was the most delightful read last night. It's Murder Falcon number one.
Yeah, you were squeaking.
I was giggling. It is so much fun. It was written and drawn by Mr. Daniel Warren Johnson of Extremity fame and of Space Mullet fame and lots of shit.
Mike Spice is doing colors, right?
Correct.
Those two are joined at the hip, and
yes,
I love it.
They look amazing together. But Daniel Warren Johnson's very prolific. You see him doing these like convention commissions, and they look like splash pages on comics. They're amazing. Letters by Russ Wooten on here is definitely a departure from Extremity, which was very, very drama. And this is still similarly violent and bloody, but it is mostly based around a dude who powers the Murder Falcon by playing heavy metal on his guitar.
What's a Murder Falcon?
You find out in the book.
Okay.
But that's this fella, and they fight monsters because he's able to power Murder Falcon to fight the monsters with the power of metal.
You're a falcon.
It is hilarious, and it's really heartfelt, and like, oh, it's just a wonderful book, and you should read it.
Great.
What's your first one for the week?
My first one is an OGN in hardcover form. My heroes have always been junkies from Image Comics.
That's on my list, too.
This one's written by Ed Brubaker, art by Sean Phillips, colors by his son, Jacob Phillips.
I met his son and him at TCAF last year, and I bought a print from his son that was of Morrissey and Johnny Marr.
Oh, was that where it was from?
Yes.
Oh, that makes sense.
So that was him, and it's a great print.
He colors his dad's stuff in a way that's completely different. I'm looking at Sean Phillips' art in a new way now. If you've gotten kind of used to how Betty Breitweiser colored Sean Phillips throughout the many years on Criminal,
Fatale,
The Fade Out, Killer Be Killed, you need a shot in the arm, this is the book that's going to do it. I'm very excited about it. And OGNs coming from Image Comics are always a cause for attention. This is no different. My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies hardcover is my first pick. And your second, MJ, what's third for you?
My third pick is DC's Cursed Comics Cavalcade. Or Cursed? Cursed Comics Cavalcade?
Either works for me.
Well, anyway, it's a big old $10, 80-page anthology with 10 different stories in it, featuring the likes of Tim Seeley, Kyle Hotz, Ricardo Federici, Vita Ayala, Riley Rossimo, Gabriel Hardman, Karina Bechko, Magdalene Visaggio, Mike Morrissey, Brian Hill, Dexter Soy, James Tynan, and Mark Buckingham. There's so many good peeps in this, and I love a good horror anthology.
Yeah.
I always enjoy these anthologies DC puts out, even though they're expensive, but they put out a couple a year.
You and I got into a big conversation about price last
night. Yeah, about whether or not $10 is a good price for a big 80-page square-bound dude.
I feel it's excessive. I think DC can afford to drop it a couple of bucks, but that's me.
It's the usual price for these, and I really like seeing, like, you know, horror stories involving the various superheroes.
And it makes you happy, and I enjoy seeing you happy.
So what's your next pick?
Speaking of horror, I'm going over to Marvel for The Immortal Hulk number 7. This is written by Al Ewing, penciled by Joe Bennett, inks by Rui Jose, colors by Paul Mounts, the great Paul Mounts, and letters by VC's Corey Petit, or Petit, I don't know. If you're not reading Immortal Hulk by now, what are you waiting for? It's as good as it's ever been. As a matter of fact, I was thinking the other day, Mariko Tamaki's Hulk run and The Immortal Hulk are two definitive Hulk stories happening back to back from each other. It's amazing. It's remarkable how much one character or one character's family can create such great stories so consistently. And I'm very excited about it. Immortal Hulk, it's a horror book, but it's also got its superhero trappings. This issue sees the Immortal Hulk finally brush up against the Avengers. So check that out. MJ, what's next for you?
My next one is House of Whispers from DC's Vertigo. Their brand new spankin' Vertigo line with such great stuff that is in very high demand. It makes me very happy. This one is written by Nalo Hopkinson, illustrated by Dominique Domo Stanton, colors by John Rauch, letters by Duron Bennett. This title has brought some much-needed diversity into sort of the Gaiman-verse, the Sandman universe, And it's really cool to see all these like voodoo elements brought into the dreaming proper.
It's a good fit.
Yeah. And the story's really cool. I've just been loving it a lot. Sweet. Second issue's out this week.
Awesome. My next one's another horror book, Infinite Dark number one. This is a series from Top Cow, an imprint of Image Comics. This is written by one Ryan Cady. It's his first creator-owned project, which he's co-created with artist Andrea Muti, colors by K. Michael Russell, and letters by Troy Pateri. I had the privilege of reading this last night. I'll be providing a review of this issue tomorrow on DoomRocket.com, so keep an eye out for that. I enjoyed it immensely. I think you guys will too. It has a really awesome premise. The universe is dead. It's dying. Like, the last ebbs of it contain one space station that was meant to house hundreds of thousands of humanity, and nobody could make it. That it's populated by a skeleton crew of people, and somebody just murdered somebody else. So it's a murder mystery, it's entropy, it's everything I love in one comic book. Infinite Dark number one is out this week. Check it out. MJ, what's next for you?
Well, my last pick for the week is Vault Comics' These Savage Shores, mm-hmm. number one. Written by Ram V, illustrated by Sumit Kumar, colored by Vittorio Estone, and lettered by Aditya Bidikar. Mm-hmm. This book, I just thought it looked cool. I didn't really have much of an idea what it was about. Mm-hmm. It deals with some vampire stuff.
Yeah, it looks very 70s YA.
I wouldn't say it's that. It's really cool, though, because you read this whole issue and think the story's going a certain direction. And it by the last couple pages, it just turns you on your head.
That's my favorite kind of story.
It's going to be something totally different.
Sweet.
It's incredibly great, and surprisingly so. These Savage Shores number one from Vault. You should pick it up this week. What's your next ones?
I have two remaining. First one's from Black Mask, Survival Fetish number four. This is written by Patrick Kinlan, art by Antonio Fuso, letters by Jim Campbell. Antonio Fuso has impressed me immensely with this book. It's a story about a guy who is a courier who runs across the rooftops in a post-war Honolulu, and he is being targeted by various gangland snipers, and his life is very dangerous, and it's fraught with peril, and Fuso's artwork in this completely captures that. It captures movement, it captures stress. Check it out. Survival Fetish number four is my fourth pick, and my final one is The Amazing Spider-Man number seven. This one's written by Nick Spencer, art by Humberto Ramos, inks by Victor Olazaba, colors by Edgar Delgado, and letters by Joe Caramagna. Amazing Spider-Man's been great. I've been recommending it to practically everyone I know, even people who don't read superhero comics. I'm like, you like fun? Well, fun rules, and so does Amazing Spider-Man. Issue number seven's out this week, and that closes out our top five most anticipated issues of the week. Every week we take to social media to ask you guys a pressing question on our minds, and this week's question: which comic book character has been most accurately represented on TV? Which character hasn't? We asked, you guys answered. MJ, will you please take it away?
On Facebook, CW Cook says Batman Brave and the Bold is the best Batman on TV and has been the best represented on that show and various other animated shows.
On Facebook, Clyde Hall said, given the limit of network TV, Matt Ryan as John Constantine certainly met my expectations for the character. The Huntress from the TV show Birds of Prey, with full-on meta capabilities, seemed one of the bigger mishandles of a great character.
Ryan Bravo on Facebook said, Supergirl generally does pretty well with characters between Supergirl, Superman, and Martian Manhunter.
Over on Twitter, Alana Levin at Alana underscore Brooklyn said, the bland Batman-ness of Green Arrow on the show Arrow has overwritten the adequate but not great characterization he had on Justice League Unlimited. And in the more recent cartoons, he's miles off. Blah. Best? Probably Jessica Jones.
Caitlin Roseberg on Facebook says, Tyler Hoechlin's butt as super butt.
On Facebook, Alejandro A. Arbona had a one-word or two-word answer, I should say, The Tick.
Katie Schenkel at Just Plain Tweets on Twitter said, I feel like Lois Lane is in the running. And then for worst, from the little I've seen, probably Ralph Dibny.
On Twitter, Arturo R. Garcia at A Boy Named Dart said, best animated Batman, the animated series, Justice League Unlimited and Young Justice, live action, the CW Flash elevated Barry Allen into a worthwhile character as opposed to a Silver Age relic, and worst, Hawk Girl, from demigoddess and badass on JLU to I'm a barista in live action in the CW.
At Jeff Leese on Twitter said, worst, Hawkman, Hawkgirl, and Vandal Savage in the Arrowverse. Best, any character in the DCAU, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. Most improved on TV from their original comics counterparts, Vibe in the Arrowverse. Mr. Hyde as played by Kyle MacLachlan.
On Twitter, Big Mike Energy at Mjolnir MK86 said, best, Luke Cage or Clark Kent, I presume he means on Supergirl, and worst, Blue Beetle.
At Joshua Hood on Twitter said, best Clark Kent, Smallville Season 1. Worst Clark Kent, Smallville Season 10. Mm.
On Twitter still, JB at JB Nimble said, best I could think of is Supergirl. Melissa Benoist and the writers bring the perfect balance of optimism and wisdom that I have always associated with the character. Worst, Doomsday on Smallville is the first one that comes to mind.
At Dan underscore Brooks on Twitter said, tough one, but I'd have to say Superman. Live action, animation, they've done right by him. Rick Grimes might be number two.
And finally, over on the Doom Rocket Facebook page, Andrew Elias said, most accurately, there are quite a few on The Walking Dead. Like all the thousands of walkers, for example. Which character hasn't? Any character on The Walking Dead that had a speaking line. All right, MJ, who do you think has been most accurately represented on TV, and who do you think hasn't?
Not necessarily accurate, but my favorite is probably Robin on Teen Titans Go.
It's definitely not accurate, but it's the most fun.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Or Beast Boy.
Or Beast
Boy. Mama.
Every character on Teen Titans Go is just an awesome representation. Not accurate, which is the question. So who is the most accurate representation as far as you're concerned?
Supergirl, played by Melissa Benoist. Mm-hmm. Like, she's flawless in that part.
Yeah, I really struggle saying that Grant Gustin as Barry Allen is the most accurate because he's just not. But he is the best interpretation of Barry Allen I can think of in any medium, and that includes comics. I am not a Barry Allen fan.
I still think he's got a lot of Wally West in him.
Oh, definitely. Although, you hear Dan DiDio say it's the complete opposite. That Barry Allen used to be like this freewheeling, fun-loving kind of guy, and Wally West kind of co-opted his personality traits depending on the writers who wrote him. For me, as far as like the perfect personification of a comic book character on another medium, it's Batman the Animated Series, hands down. Bruce Wayne on that show is Batman.
Everybody else on that show is pretty well represented as well. Like, every time I read the word detective, mm-hmm. I hear David Warner saying it as Ra's al Ghul. I do.
It's good. It's because he's great. I love how he says his name too. Ra's al Ghul.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
Ra's, by the way. That's how Denny O'Neill says it. That's how it says.
Blah, 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 blah.
That's what I'm saying. As far as live action is concerned, I want to say Luke Cage is probably the most accurate as far as like the Bendis era of the character is concerned. And they did some throwbacks to the 70s, you know, Sweet Christmas version too, but it was all tongue-in-cheek. And I guess Daredevil, Charlie Cox's Matt Murdock. Although I feel like Matt Murdock has more of a sense of humor in the comics than he does in the show.
It depends.
Yeah.
It depends which run. His Irish accent comes through a little too much for me to say that he's the most accurate.
It only happens when he's getting intense, which is the entire show.
Yeah.
But I love Charlie Cox. I really wish they'd bump him up to MCU primetime. But
one of these days we are going to... Have you ever seen Stardust? We're going to watch Stardust.
No, I haven't seen
because
Stardust.
Because we get both Daredevil... and Superman, Henry Cavill, is in that movie.
He's not Superman no more.
We don't know that!
It's true,
but I'd like to.
I want to think it. And that's it. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 73-episode archive over on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and subscribe, tell us how we're doing, or search Casual Wednesdays on DoomRocket.com. New episodes every Wednesday afternoon. And look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JarrettJones_. MJ, where can they find you?
At @MollyJane_K.
Thanks, MJ. So until the day the kid in the Aquaman movie gets a damn haircut, I remain Jared. That's MJ. And from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a great new comic book day. That kid looks ridiculous. I'm sorry.